Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Oh, hello, welcome to another Tech Talk. I am Stephen Scott. Robin Christofferson's here as well. Hello to you, Robin.
Hello. Happy May?
Yeah, I suppose.
What I was thinking about there was how I could wangle in the fact that I'm head of digital inclusion at AbilityNet, because we don't get that in very often, but it ended up as Happy May.
Right. Well, well done in introducing yourself. You've done a fantastic job of that. Andy Wynne is also here. I wonder if Andy can do better at that. Hello, Andy.
Hello, Stephen. Hello, Robin. No wangling on my behalf this week.
Oh, no showing off titles this week from you then?
No, I don't have a title. Can I have one?
I didn't say that I was MBE or anything. I didn't mention that at all.
MBE, yeah. Oh, you know, there we go. Clang. There goes another one. MBE.
Sorry, Andy.
How was her Madge? Was she all right when you met her?
It was Prince W. Yeah, cool. Thanks.
That was probably quite annoying, was it not?
Oh, dear.
No, not at all.
Was it in the spare room instead of the grand hall, you know?
Yeah, just come round the back, will you? Just pick it up on the way. Get a couple of biscuits as well for the dog. Did the dog get a biscuit? Did Prince W pat the dog? Did you know?
Yeah, we got nice photos and things. Yeah, he was there. Archie, the massive wolf, was in the shot as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's good that you don't bring it up often. That's the main thing.
Yeah, that's right.
Anyway, lots to get through on the show this week. Mainly your emails, actually, because we've been... I don't think we've been neglecting them, actually, because Sean did a fantastic job of keeping up. Unfortunately, last week, being back for the first time in a long time, let's just say I've been a little bit talkative. So what's new there? But I thought it'd be good this week just to get into the mailbag. So Andy's got the bag of swag.
Yeah, let's get up to date on our emails, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm going to do that. We've got to talk, though, first about the big news of the day.
News from the internet.
What is the internet saying this week? Well, it is saying that there are new Microsoft Surface toys to buy. Are you excited, Robin Christofferson?
No. Sorry.
Well, that was easy. Straight to emails. No, look, I think this is quite interesting. The Surface Go 2... is the one that I'm kind of focusing in on. Now, I did have a play around with the Surface Go 1 when it came out, and I was in a Microsoft store somewhere, and I was playing around with it. I quite liked it, because I was never keen on the Surface Pro. I think it's the 6 we're on at the moment, or is it the 7? I was getting mixed up with these.
7, maybe, yep.
7, I think, yeah. So the 8, I guess, is due out any time. But yeah, they brought out the Surface Go, which is a smaller version. And it's kind of aimed, I guess, more at educational markets. It's maybe aimed more for kids. Although it's not a shrinking violet, and they've kind of made that clear this time around. The criticism of the first one was that it was running very slow Pentium processors. And, you know, even at the base level of this, it's running a Pentium Gold processor. I've got to say, guys, when I hear the word Pentium, you know, shivers go up my spine. I don't want a Pentium processor anywhere near me. But Intel, yes. And, you know, Core i3, i5, i7, ideally, i9 if you can afford it. But you're not going to get that inside a machine this small. What you are going to get, though, is the Core M3 if you get to the higher levels. And, you know, you're kind of, it's interesting because the website says it starts at 399. That's just for the device, the tablet, Surface Go. You have to buy the additional keyboard separately, which I think is about 124. Then you've got to buy, if you want the Surface Pen, you can buy that as well. And suddenly it starts mounting up. And this is off of the base level, which has got that horrible Pentium Gold in it. Whereas most people are going to want the Core M3. And I think, if I'm right in saying, I packaged it up, it was going to come in at something like $849 for the keyboard, the tablet, and also the pen. So, you know, it's a really nice system. The size is, you know, I've got what they call in the technology world, fat fingers. And that might be a challenge for this, for me. I mean, I do like a small keyboard. I must say, I do quite like the small keyboard. There is one problem with it, though, which I'll get to. Andy, you're looking at them online, aren't you? Because you've been looking at this.
Yeah.
Are you interested in these? Do these appeal to you?
No, not compared to the Pixelbook, which I'm still a huge, huge fan of. But I'm guessing that's its main competitor, maybe, for that kind of small device. I don't know. What else in the market would be in that range?
Well, I mean,
I think you're right. I think
yeah,
right.
It's full Windows, but at the same time, you know, a Chromebook is definitely a competitor in the education space. So I would totally agree there. Yeah, but it's pretty pretty small, this Surface Go, isn't it?
It is. I can't remember the size, Andy. Is it 10.2 or?
Well, this is a strange timing because my Windows just crashed on me, but I can't give you the information.
That's ironic.
Yeah, let me get the Pixelbook out. There we go.
Yeah, get a machine that works on the go.
And I can go into tablet mode on the Pixelbook as well. So there you go.
Yeah, that's right. Because you've got the Pixelbook. What was it, that 2 years back version?
Yeah, I think so. It's, well, they're known as Chromebooks, but then this one specifically, I think, was Pixelbook. Correct me if I'm right.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Beautiful machine. Really is a beautiful machine. So well done. I mean, I've got the Pixelbook Slate, or Pixel Slate, I think, actually, is the official name of it. And that's the one which I guess is more like a Surface Pro in the sense that it doesn't have a kickstand at the back, but it does have a folding out keyboard. And you know, you've got the little stand at the back, which kind of, you know, it kind of folds into, and it's a nice little machine. I'd say it's actually nicer layout than the Pro, because I never liked the kickstand. I don't want to assemble my computer before I use it. That's my issue. So you know, I really like the idea of these. Now, Robin, I mean, you're not a huge fan of these, by the sounds of it. I mean, I'm going to give you a solid reason why you should not buy one in a minute.
Okay. So I think that Windows on a tablet was certainly helped by Windows 10. Windows 8 went far the other way to make it a touch-first interface. So I think there's a happy medium now with Windows 10, but they are very underpowered, and that's the problem with Intel. Now, Microsoft are working on a complete rebuild of Windows. It's called Windows Core OS, Windows 10 X for dual screens, which they've now reported is actually going to be for single screens first, because they're having trouble getting the dual screen capabilities up and running. Now, that will run much more efficiently, so we'll be able to get the performance and the battery life approaching an iPad. And this is definitely an iPad competitor here. This Surface Go is very small, though, too small for even females to type on the on-screen keyboard. I've heard of reports of that online. And the M3 is only 46% quicker than the Pentium Gold, according to Microsoft, which is, you know, half as much again of very, very slow, very little. So I'm unconvinced, and we'll see what the reviews are like when they come in. But it's definitely not, you know, an iPad killer in any way, shape or form, unless you absolutely need portability, you know, real lightweight, and you need Windows. So, yeah, but I think it's a rapidly changing space, so you may want to keep your powder dry until Windows Core OS comes out later this year.
The power of these things is the concern, especially for us using things like JAWS, because, you know, JAWS on a machine like that, I mean, I had someone tell me, and I can't say who, I'm not allowed to say who, but someone told me, and that's all I'll say, that when it came to the Surface Pro X, which is their kind of iPad, I guess, equivalent, although arguably I would say this, the Surface Go 2 is far more iPad equivalent, especially in terms of price. But, you know, it's running its new processor. Is it the Atom processor? It's ARM processor, I beg your pardon, the ARM processor. Yep. And that is not going to work really well with things like JAWS. It's not going to be powerful enough. It's not going to be as compatible. There are going to be challenges with it. And this is the problem we're facing, as it seems the computing world is moving towards a world of touchscreen interface, everything through the touchscreen. I don't think, you know, you could buy an iPad as a blind person and be comfortable knowing that everything you want to do is achievable. You've got, in fact, we should maybe mention as well, because you've got the iPad Pro, and maybe we should actually bring up a little chat about that today as well, if you've had a chance to use it, because I think it's safe to say, and tell me if I'm wrong, but I think it's safe to say that if you're a blind person, you can just pick this up, set it up, get it going, use it, and enjoy every aspect of it. Yes, there'll be the odd inaccessible app or the odd unlabeled button, but ultimately you'll be able to use, you know, a fair chunk, 90 maybe, you know, that's maybe optimistic, but let's say 90% of the system. Whereas with this, in tablet mode, if you were to use JAWS, I think I'd give up. I think I'd be screaming for an iPad or an Apple Mac at that point, because I think I couldn't live with that. If that's the way it's going, I'd be pushing myself away from Microsoft.
And the emulation that you've got on that machine to be able to run 32-bit apps, they're basically in like little virtual machines. They call them containers, and that will have a massive impact on performance as well. So, yeah, we all know that when you run a screen reader, you have to have the beef there to make it a half-decent experience. So, yeah, it's very, very demanding. Less so on the Mac side, because VoiceOver is kind of built in. It's not a third-party thing running scripts in the background and that sort of thing. But that's the power of JAWS as well.
I love the form factor of the Surface Go 2. And I know you've got it in front of you there, Andy. You're looking at it. Mm-hmm. You know, that the form factor is lovely. It's a really nice size.
Yeah.
The keyboard might be a little bit smaller. It's obviously smaller than the Surface Pro Big, as we'll now call it. But, you know, this little kiddie one, which I do like, especially in poppy red. I think the poppy red is very nice.
Yeah.
Red, for some reason, is the only color I can see with any kind of distinction. So that's why I've always loved the color red. And it's the only one I can see, so it really stands out. And you know, it's really nice. It's got that nice keyboard. It's a nice portable device. It's a really perfect little machine. But when you spec it up to the highest, you're getting 8 gig of RAM. I think it's got 256 gig SSD in it. So it's not, you can't really go much further than that. You can't spec it up with 16 gig RAM, which I would probably do for JAWS. And like you say, Robin, that core processor is not going to be up there as much. What are you thinking when you're looking at it there? Because I guess you're looking at this for the first time.
Right, looking at it, yeah, for the first time. I'm looking at a site here saying that the Go 2 is faster than the Pro X in early benchmarks tests. And I'm thinking, this reminds me of, yeah, the excitement of the first level of those when those Pixelbooks came out and how that was better than the other ones that they had produced. So they're now saying that it's faster. And yeah, like you, Stephen, I like the look of it as well, in that red as well. It reminds me of an old Dell that I had in that size. I think it was the Inspiron range, but they were tiny little laptops.
No, that was, do you know, that was the XPS range.
Yeah.
I remember that. So I had one, of course.
I had one as well, yeah. I bought it specifically for university use because it was so portable, yeah, easy to carry around, and it didn't need all the flashy things, like it didn't have a CD drive in it like my last laptop did before that. And it was so portable, and all I needed it for was writing, browsing the web, and just essentials like that. So if this is a more modern version of that, yeah, this will hit a fantastic peak in the market, I think.
What's the screen size, Andy?
Let's see, going down.
They have commented that it has enormous bezels, which doesn't look very
good. But not as much as the last one. I think the Surface Go 1, the bezels were worse, arguably. You know, it was like the first iPad.
10.5-inch pixel sense display.
10.5. Yeah. There you go. So it's the same size as an iPad then.
Yeah, around that size, yeah. Microsoft say that the Surface Go 2 delivers 64% faster performance when compared to the original Surface Go. And they've improved battery life for 10 hours.
And just to finish the Microsoft hardware update, they have brought out the Surface Book 3.
Yeah, nobody cares.
And that's the one that has the detachable kind of tablet screen.
You know, whenever I think about tablets now, I just run in horror. Other than an iPad, but even an iPad now, I'm kind of like, nah, I want a keyboard attached. And I'm really glad in a lot of ways that the companies are moving towards, you know, building these tablets with keyboards as well. I mean, obviously Apple's still doing that, although, you know, I am completely dumbfounded by the need for a trackpad on an iPad. I do not understand the purpose of this thing at all. Maybe someone will explain it to me, but I'm not going to spend the money to find out. But yeah, I don't know. But anyway, let's talk a little bit about your iPad Pro, because you got it. You managed to set it up yourself. I know you said that to us.
Mm-hmm.
How are you finding it?
Yeah, well, I mean, setup was really easy because we just put it near the old iPad Air 2 and it just sensed it and said, do you want to, you know, refresh this using that to make it mirror the other one? And we said yes. And apart from having to download the apps from the cloud, but they just sit there with little progress bars until they're all downloaded, and having to sign in again into Netflix and things like that, it is that simple. You just get the same iPad back on the bigger screen. The apps do run differently, obviously. With the bigger screen, you can now have multi-column, and in something like Mail, you actually get three columns. You get the set of inboxes, in the middle column you get the currently selected inbox, and in the right hand side you get the email that's highlighted. So this is a completely different experience, and I've been really enjoying driving it from the keyboard and learning the keystroke alternatives, because the thing that daunted me about the iPad, and is even more so with this much bigger 12.9 inch version, is the sheer amount of real estate. So if you're roaming your finger around, it's really challenging, I think. I like the small screen of the iPhone 8, for example, where there's just a limited amount of stuff and you're only dealing with one screen's worth of information at a time. But learning the keyboard alternatives actually helps a lot because you can drive it from the keyboard more often and there's less of that roaming around. And as long as you know the keystrokes to switch between apps, Command Tab, you've actually got, you know, the equivalent of the Alt Tab is now has now come to iOS. And there are keystrokes for going to the dock and the app switcher and the notification center and the controls panel and that sort of thing. So there's so many different ways of driving it that it feels quite laptopish. And it came with a smart keyboard, which is part of the case. It just, you know, it's part of the cover. And there are a couple of grooves with really strong magnets that you can prop, have different angles that you prop up the iPad at. And the key typing experience is really nice. It's like a fabric-covered keyboard. And yeah, I'm liking it a lot. Really, really liking it to just do everyday tasks with and to play text adventure games, which I'm into at the moment, and various other things. I like it. I really like it. The irony is, though, that the sighted members of the family, well, Judith, my wife, who I'm thinking would be the main beneficiary of it, it just thinks it's too big. So she's going to stick with the Air 2 at the moment until it, you know, inevitably dies at some point. But yeah, it's good.
The 12.9 is a big screen, and it's I think on its own, it's not too bad to hold. But I think part of the problem with these iPads, these new ones, is that the bezel is so thin around them.
Yeah.
That if you're holding them in your hand, you can very easily just touch the screen. And that's one thing that I have never really understood why Apple just couldn't put a little bit of a bezel on it. I mean, I know they obviously want to get rid of the bezel, makes it look really beautiful and big and all that, and, you know, use as much of that space as possible. But at the same time, you're always touching the screen, so it seems crazy.
If you're on voiceover,
that's not fun either because you're, you know, bouncing the focus all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, I've never worked out how they, you know, what the complication when you've got voiceover running is, what the behaviour is like. But certainly I've read articles where, normally speaking, it tries to reject accidental touches, like when you're picking it up by the edge or something, or palm rejection if you're typing on the on-screen keyboard. So I don't know how that would change if you had voiceover running, though. But yeah, it is disconcerting when it goes right to the edge.
Is that multi-column approach to apps, which makes perfect sense because of the size of the screen. If you're using the iPad with a keyboard, in your case the iPad Pro, you're going to have in landscape mode, which means that all the app has so much room to show you lots of information. And of course, if you're just using the screen to flick up and down the list of emails through your mailboxes and then through the actual content of the email itself, then that's great. You've got all that visual space to do it. But for us, actually, that's not great, I don't think, because you have more to navigate. You've got to get yourself from the all mailboxes to the mail, you know, section, to that column, find the email, then get yourself to the email and go on from there, and then find the reply button, all the rest of it. You know, it's a journey to get an email. And the great thing is, like you're saying, there are these keyboard commands that do help. The one thing that's always confused me about the iPad, having had the iPad Pro as well, is that it really irritates me that a lot of the commands that exist on the iPad Pro, and I've been saying this for a long time, people think I'm going crazy, but, you know, honestly, there are so many things, and you're noticing this as well, that exist on the iPad side but don't exist on the iOS side. So we've talked a lot on this show about using iOS with a keyboard. I know we've got lots of questions about it. I always get questions about keyboards and iOS using a keyboard with iPhones. And, you know, things like Command Tab just don't work on the iPhone. I don't understand why that just doesn't work. Surely the processor inside these phones could handle that.
Oh, yeah. It's totally just the choice of the developers. I don't know. They obviously want to differentiate the slightly more pro version of OS, iOS, which is iPad OS. So maybe they want to make it more fully functioned to be a reason to go there. But at the same time, there are an awful lot of people using a Bluetooth keyboard on their phone to put in lots of text, etc. So why not be able to quickly switch between apps with Command Tab? Totally agree.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you don't buy an iPhone. But I guess that most people probably don't buy an iPhone with the intention of using it with a keyboard. I know years ago, you could buy keyboard docks for your iPhone. In fact, I found one in my loft ages ago, which had still got the old 30-pin connector. It was an Apple Magic keyboard, but it had on it a 30-pin connector that you would put your iPhone at the time or an iPad into, and it would allow you to use it with a keyboard. And interestingly, the keyboard, the way it had to lay out because of where the lightning port was, well, it wasn't a lightning port, it was a 30-pin connector, was at the bottom of the device, meant it was always in portrait mode rather than landscape. And, you know, I remember using that at the time thinking this is great. Not the most portable of things because it was quite a big, chunky dock, but it was a great desktop solution. But, you know, I think this is good. And I'm personally more interested in the iPad 10.2, which is the basic iPad, you might call it, yep. the entry-level one. I'm intrigued by that and the keyboard for it. I'm holding off, though. I'm thinking I might be keen on one again. I don't know. I do like having an iPad around, but I definitely don't want that size again. I'm also, you know, and this kind of brings us back to the Microsoft conversation a little bit, but I'm also looking for a PC, and maybe you can recommend something here, dear listener, because I'm researching like crazy here. I'm trying to find a good JAWS-friendly laptop, PC laptop. And, you know, when it comes to a lot of today's tech, it is so expensive to get that portability, that lightness, and power and all of that. You've got to spend a lot of money. And I'm thinking, well, what if you don't have a lot of money? What if you want to spend £400, say, on something? What are you getting for that money? And would it be able to handle something like JAWS? Or, you know, at least in a good way, you know, would it handle it well? I mean, again, I suppose if you're spending that kind of money, you might not look to JAWS. You might be looking at NVDA. So the question might be better asked, what runs best for NVDA? That might be a better place to start. And so, you know, I think that's an interesting conversation that we need to maybe have, because this stuff is really good, but it's all very expensive.
And interestingly enough, because NVDA runs a little bit lighter than JAWS because of the lack of scripting, etc., it probably would be more performant on a lower-end machine. So it made me smile the other day. The Verge have already announced their top laptop of 2020, which is the Dell XPS 13. No surprises there. Brilliant, brilliant machine. Not in your budget range, though. You know, it's not a lower-end machine at all. But, yeah, that's their take on it.
The closest I've found to something decent was the Dell. Now, this is a bit of a weird one because this is actually only available from Dell Business. And it's called the Dell Vostro 5391, right? Catchy name. And what they've done is they've developed this, which is basically a business machine. There are different variants in that range. I've picked out on the 5391 because it's a 13.3 inch screen. You can get it with, you know, like 16 gig RAM. You can put 512 gig SSD in there. It's got 10th generation Intel Core processor, so you can really beef it up. And what they're saying is, it is essentially the same power, the same experience of a Dell XPS without a fancy screen. And that's the bit I'm interested in. So I can have—I don't really need, and it's about half the price as well, by the way. So, you know, you can get a really powerful system for a lot less. But if you don't have a business account, and probably most of us don't, then you want to buy the consumer version. In that case, it is the Dell Inspiron 13. The 5000 series is the most commonly associated, so it seems to work on those numbers. So the Dell Inspiron 13. Which is the 5000 series. That one starts at around $399. And, I mean, obviously, you can bulk it up any way you want. But that seems to be a really nice machine. And it's the closest to the XPS, but without the price tag and the fancy screen.
They're having
so it might just be worth, you know, looking
at. They have it on their website. They're selling it as a video conferencing tool. That's their main selling point. That's the first thing that they mention when they're talking about this 13-inch laptop. They're saying it's thin, light, and uses advanced video conferencing for easy communication. So there you go. That's what it's for.
Yeah, and Dell. I'll be honest. Even Lenovo. I've been looking at Lenovo. I think even looking on eBay for some of the older Lenovo ThinkPads, the X280, which is now discontinued, is a brilliant laptop. That's a powerhouse machine, and you get it at a really good price. You can pay £400-500 for it. In fact, you can even get some of them. I was looking at one last night that had 4G built in, so you could put a SIM card in there. I need a 4G LTE on the move. And I've got to say, Robin, that really appeals. So, you know, anyway, that's been what I've been doing. I've been buying a lot of nonsense. I've got to tell you, I've been buying so much garbage on TV. Shopping TV needs to get cancelled. It is a disgrace.
The devil makes work for idle TV clickers.
Yeah, exactly.
idle
remote control. Exactly. Take the batteries out, will you? I mean, it is just crazy. We bought so much stuff. But one of the things we got this week was, and I think this is the best tech in the world, the Turbo Scrub. No, you might have seen that guess for this thing, right?
Right. Robin, you have to guess what the Turbo Scrub does.
Yeah, you've got to guess.
I went straight to like toilet brush, but I'm sure it's not.
Yeah, that's it. You're pretty much
it's not a smart toilet brush, is it?
It's not a smart toilet brush, but it's smarter than your average toilet brush, put it that way. You know, it's like when the
comes with an app, does
the
it?
It's like the first tadpole that crawled from the swamp. You know, when it yawned, I think at that point that's where we are with the Turbo Scrub. You know, it's like that's the intelligence right. level we're at.
I think I'll wait for the Turbo Scrub 2 then, when it has Wi-Fi.
Wait till it can wave. Yeah, wait till it can dial up an Uber. This little thing, it's got a kind of head on it that you can. It looks like a toilet brush actually, but you can use it anywhere in the house. Ideally, not use the
this
same.
This does
head
not
on
sound everywhere from the same.
And you press a little button and it spins really quickly. And the idea is that you can get those stubborn stains off really easily because it spins and spins and spins, and then it kind of you get into the corner. So if you've got any dirt in the corners or whatever, and you can just get in there and it'll scrub it all out, and then you just, you know, spray some detergent or whatever on it, it cleans it all away, and then you shower it off the rest or whatever it is you're doing. You wipe it away. I was sold it at 3 o'clock in the morning, and my wife was looking at me saying, I want this, and it's on a deal. So we bought it.
It kind of looks like...
keep us updated.
It looks like a giant electric toothbrush. It's that kind of...
Yeah, I suppose it does, yeah.
Which I wouldn't advise using it as a giant electric toothbrush, but, you know...
Not after you've done the toilet with it.
No, not after you've done around the bowl with it, no. Wow. Well, I say you've got a bargain there, Stephen, for the price I'm currently looking at.
Yeah, it's an absolute bargain. It's a bargain, assuming it doesn't end up on the bin in the first... you know, 5 seconds. But yeah, fingers crossed it works. Anyway, shall we get to some emails, guys? I think we should.
Email, we get email, we get your email every day. Here's your mail today.
Right, let's get to the emails then, and... Andy, what have
we got? Hi to you all. This one is from Amy. I've just come across your podcast as I no longer have access to RNIB Connect Radio since it was removed from Sky. You had me in stitches the other night with your Star Wars versus Harry Potter stuff.
There's
one compliment there.
Glad someone liked it.
Now, I have a number of comments that I would like to make. Firstly, I disagree with what you said about dropping down soundtrack with audio description. Now, this is going back to before you were off, Stephen, with films that were a little bit too loud and soundtracks were overtaking the audio description.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So Amy says, I am deafblind, and since the new type of sound was brought in, I have found it the opposite. An old film, I could hear the dialogue, background, and audio description really well because of the drop-down, but on the new films, I found it really hard, and at times I can't hear the audio description at all because the background sounds just drown it out, and all of the dialogue as well completely. Now, I love fantasy and action films, and on them... the background is so loud that I actually lose parts of the audio description completely throughout the film. Same with the dialogue, it completely disappears, and I often miss what is being said these days, since actors don't seem to speak loudly or clearly as they used to. Now, I was very interested by the Amazon microwave, but do you know if it will be workable through iPhone or Lady A devices instead of the Google device? The drone parcel thing had me think, but how are we hard of hearing as well going to know when the parcel's been dropped off? Would we interact with the drone that does not speak or make a noise? You're either deafblind with these types of things, but no one thinks about the deafblind. We are always left out of everything, it seems. Very interested by the launch of the reading services. This is RIB reading services that I have a few questions as I use my iPhone 6. So what software would I need to use in order to play them on my phone, or would it just be easier to copy them to my Victor Reader Stream Classic? It does not have Wi-Fi connectivity because it is the second edition of the Classic, so how would I be able to copy files over and play? I stopped getting the service years ago when it was still discs only, so I'd have to go through signing back up again as a new reader, and you have to pay for the service because years ago you did have to pay? Never laughed so hard in my life, and keep up the good work. That's from Amy.
Oh, thanks.
So there's a lot of things to dissect there. So going back to the dialogue and audio description and the noise of films.
I can't agree more. I mean, I think today's movies are atrociously bad when it comes to dialogue, especially.
Totally
but
agree.
I think when you add the AD track, it is actually even worse, because we watched a movie the other night. I bought it on iTunes called The Intruder. And the one thing about this movie, it was not a bad movie, but it just it had a really loud soundtrack on it. I believe the music is called Hip Hop. I actually have no idea if that's what it was. I didn't know it. And anything I don't know, I just call hip hop. So it could be anything. But I watched the movie, and the music was so loud that the audio description was kind of almost punching into it. But what was happening was the whole volume was just constantly going down. Every time a song would start to rise up and the woman was trying to speak over it, it was kind of punching into her. So you could barely hear a word she was saying. You could just about hear the music. And then in amongst all this, the volume was being pushed up and down. That could have been the Bose soundbar I've got, because it's built for voice. So it might have been trying to accentuate the voice and failing miserably because of what it was dealing with. But you just think it's such a mess. And yet you get some really good examples where, you know, I mean, I think Netflix do this really well. They seem to get that balance just right. And I'd like to know your thoughts on that, Amy. If you've tried the Netflix programs versus the other. But I do agree, if you've got problems with hearing, then not lowering the audio volume is probably a challenge for you. And I think this is where, you know, going back to Texture Pro of last year, Robin, we talked about, you know, this new approach that TV is going to take, where you'll essentially be able to disconnect different sections of audio and move it around either in your head or on a sound system. The idea that you can almost detach the voice for audio description and have it somewhere else, even come out of your own phone, out of a device, or, you know, out of a speaker next to your ear versus over, you know, to the entire room.
Yeah.
That would solve this problem for Amy, really, wouldn't it?
Yeah, we talked to a chap from BT Sport, and it's called Next Generation Audio, and it does separate out, obviously the content has to be recorded in this way, but it separates out the dialogue from the background, from the sound effects, from the audio description, and you can choose your own levels, you can choose which speakers or headphones they come, each of those come through, so you can really customise the experience, because I definitely agree about dialogue. That's one reason why I don't really do TV or films, because I can't hear what people are saying. Mm. I don't like mega ducking of the background when the audio describing person comes on, because it just makes that volume level go up and down and up and down. And that doesn't feel like a very kind of fluid experience either. But I can totally appreciate that other people would like a different mix, which is why it's really important to have that kind of personalization, if at all possible. And you're right, different providers do it more or less well, and Netflix have a real reputation for doing it well. So yeah, they can vary quite a lot too.
I think when we get to a stage where TV is fully digital and online, you know, once we get to a point where our internet capability allows us to essentially consume all of our media through internet rather than through satellite or through cable or through terrestrial, I think that's when things might change in that regard, because you'll have a lot more bandwidth to do more with. And I think that's the whole point of what BT Sport we're making. There's more we can do, but we have to wait for the technology to catch up. We've got the capability. We just need to, you know, make it happen. But, you know, what they also have to balance this with, especially for sport, is if you're watching a live football game, you do not want that to be stuttering and stammering or buffering, you know, as you're trying to consume that content because of all these other additional features. You just want to watch the game. So, you know, that's where the balance has to be struck. Second point you made, Amy, about the microwave. Now, it does actually work with, Randy demoed this, I remember, a couple of weeks back, and it does work with Amazon's Echo devices. Smartphone, I don't think so, Robert.
Well, only in as much as the Amazon Alexa app is on your phone,
yeah,
and you can go into skills that way. And often skills donate different activities, as they're called, to the screen. So if you invoke it by voice, or if you go to the skill section and you find that one and tap it, and obviously if you've used it recently, it'll be on your recents, then tapping into it will give you options that are also spoken out. And I would definitely, as a deafblind person, look at the different features that you have on Echoes with a screen, ironically, because in there, there are lots of things that would otherwise be spoken that come up on the screen, and you can review with the voice view screen reader. I don't think it has Braille display support, though, I'm afraid.
As you know, I don't know the answer to that. I don't think it does, no. I know that the Kindle, well, I keep calling them Kindle tablets, we don't call them that anymore, the Fire tablets, they do have Braille support now. So you kind of think that the Echo might have it.
Yeah, I don't know is the answer, sorry.
I know you also asked about reading RNIB's reading services, Amy, but I want to get the other point you made, and it's escaped
it
me,
was,
Andy.
What was the other? We've been covering it the last couple of weeks about drone parcel delivery. Now, Amy's obviously asking now, as deafblind, how are you going to know when the drone has arrived or if it's dropped something off? How are they going to... A big, bright, shiny... Well, I suppose that wouldn't work either. I don't know.
Well, actually, that's the thing. So I think that smart technology is going to really help here, Amy. I think that's the key because, you know, initially when we were talking about... When you were reading that out, I was thinking about smart lighting. Mm. As one, but it depends, of course, on how much vision you have, Amy. You may have none at all, in which case then that's not going to work for you. But then taptic feedback or haptic feedback or vibration feedback of a device of some kind. The great thing with all of the modern technology that we're seeing now, all of this smart technology that just hooks into your house, be it through the Amazon Echo or the Google Home, or even through Siri and HomeKit on Apple's side, all that technology is getting us to a place where we can actually use it to our benefit, to suit us, you know, for example. So there's things I have in the house that I like to happen when, you know, I walk down the stairs, all my lights come on, or when I walk up to my front door, the little light outside comes on, and, you know, I get a little alert when someone opens a door, you know, audibly. Those things happen because I've set them to happen at key points during the day, at key points during the night and all the rest of it, just so that I can be safe in my home when I walk in. I'm not stumbling around trying to find a light switch and then fall over something. I mean, that'll happen anyway, but, you know, at least I won't have to find the light switch. And, you know, the lights will just come on. I love these little things, and I'm doing more and more, like, routines as well through the Amazon Echo, which is a brilliant thing, setting up various, you know, you can set up a command. You say, you know, set studio for recording, as I'm working from home, and what it does is it turns a little lamp on outside to the color red. So my wife knows I'm recording. She doesn't have to worry about coming in and interrupting me. She knows I'm doing this, and I can't be disturbed at that point. I mean, she does wonder why it's on for like 12 hours at a time. But you know, that's the thing. You can do all. You can adjust. So with more technology coming down the pipeline, more smart kit like this, I think the idea of some kind of vibrating system or something, I don't know, whatever work might work for you, either audibly, vibration, or through sound, or through visual, I should say, then that might be an option for you. So I'm quite hopeful about that. Yeah. And just on your final point about reading, can I just say, Amy, download the Dolphin Easy Reader app. That's what you want to download. You can sign into your RNIB Reading Services account on the app. It's brilliant. It's fully accessible with VoiceOver, and you'll be able to get access to your RNIB talking books. I hope that helped, and thank you for coming on and listening to our crazy show.
Yeah.
Okay, Andy, what else?
Now, this is regarding the L Braille. Am I saying that correctly? I don't know how long ago we talked about this, but, and a question from Beth. Hey, please ask if a USB QWERTY keyboard can be attached if desired. Thanks, and appreciate the interview.
Brilliant question, actually, Beth. This is something that I'm going to be putting to Stuart Beveridge. He's due to come on in the next couple of weeks. I've obviously had to postpone the interview when I was off. But, you know, we're going to get him back on the show in the next couple of weeks, and we'll get your questions. So if you have got a question around the L Braille, Stuart is very happy to answer those questions. That's a great one, because last night, actually, one of the things I was doing, just for my own interests, was looking at the BrailleSense U2 QWERTY. I don't know if you've seen this one from Hymns, Robin. This is,
well,
the Braille.
Not
it's
seen,
a Braille display.
Yeah,
all right.
Heard
smart
of.
Alec.
But not touched.
You've got the display on there, and you've got a QWERTY keyboard, right? And I remember these of old, years ago. These were kind of doing the rounds. There was a Braille Note, is it the M Voice?
Type and Speak was the first. No screen.
Well, yeah, that's good. Well, that was a Braille keyboard, wasn't it?
You weren't even a glint in someone's eye then.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was you know, kind of old. I mean, I remember way back to the, well, not that way back, but, you know, way back enough, put it that way. And, you know, all these different ones. But they're very few and far between. And looking at the Sight and Sound website last night, I think the Braille Sense U2 QWERTY, so it's got the keyboard on there, it's got the 40 cell, is it 42 or 30? I can't remember, 32 or 40 cell display, but either way, you know, it's got a Braille display on there, sizable one anyway. And it's got note-taking capability. And it's $3,500. And I'm like, it's a lot of cash for a QWERTY keyboard that, you know, speaks. Okay, I know you've got the Braille tech in there as well, but geez. So, you know, that's not going to be my shopping list anytime soon, but I'd love to find an alternative. And actually, there is one called the Mantis Q40, which the American Printing House for the Blind have announced. It's not coming out yet. They announced it at the AITA or the ATIA conference? ATIA. They announced that there back earlier this year, I think it was. And what they've said is that they're going to bring this out. It's an association with the American Printing House for the Blind and Humanware. So we're hoping we'll see that in the UK soon. But that actually has got, it's a Bluetooth keyboard. So it's got the QWERTY keyboard, but then below that it's got a Braille display, a 40-cell Braille display built in. No details on pricing yet, but it seems like quite a nice compact unit, which is good. Aimed again at kids at school. But I quite like this idea. I like the idea of mixing it up and having my QWERTY and my Braille in one. I just wish it had note-taker capability. It does have a little bit of it, but it doesn't have any audio output on it, so you still have to connect it to a phone or whatever if you want to get any audible feedback. But, yeah, it's still a bit behind the times on that regard. I think Braille still has a long way to go to redevelop itself fully. You know, it's great at the moment if you're using the Braille keyboard. And I am. I do love my Braille keyboard, but I'm not as fully ready to jump on to, say, Windows or a Mac using my Braille display, because there's so much I still have to learn. Whereas if I had the QWERTY keyboard, I can still use my Braille, but I can, you know, also have the QWERTY. I mean, yes, I know I could just have a Bluetooth keyboard and sit my Braille display next to it. I know. But, you know.
You need to have it all in one place, really. So a two-in-one would be good. Yeah.
The Mantis Q40 sounds like a good one. I'm quite excited about that one.
So how's your Braille coming on?
Well, I use it every day. I mean, I've got a 40-cell Focus 40, obviously. 14 as well. A Braille display that I got through Access to Work, and I'm loving those. One is intended to be a desktop, and the other's my portable, but at the moment I'm kind of using the 40 cell for everything. And, you know, connected up to my iPhone, that's an absolute joy to use. I love it.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And I do have it with my QWERTY keyboard from my MacBook sitting on top of it, so I can kind of use all in one. I've got my phone, I've got my computer all running off the two, and yeah, it's a really nice setup. But and that's what we kind of, you know, talked about with the L-Braille, you know, how you can connect it up and you would essentially have a Windows 10 machine all in one, you know, without the need for a screen at all, which could be interesting. Anyway, let's get some other emails because we're rapidly running out of time again. What else have we
got? Dear team, thank you for your superb programmes. Very interesting and useful. Since Stephen gave the presentation of the Blind Shell Classic a few months ago, I have acquired one and it even speaks Norwegian.
Oh,
and
amazing.
I just love the phone. I have been looking for a phone to replace my Nokia C5, for it is old and I am afraid that it could collapse someday. I also have an iPhone, but I find that numeric keyboard much easier to write on and to make calls, or even when dialing the numbers. I find the calendar function on the iPhone difficult to use as well, but the Blind Shell Classic has an extremely logical and handy calendar, and many of the menus were much easier for me to navigate and use than the ones on the iPhone. And with internet radio, YouTube, music player, access to the LibriVox, is that right? Is that
LibriVox,
yeah, library, and many other features, it really is just the thing for me. So I am deeply in love with it, and ability filling in all of my contacts and calendar happenings, just in case there are others like me out there who prefer the numeric keyboard and keys to press. So that's from our friend in Norway. That's from Odd.
Hey, good to hear from you, Odd. You know, I'm so glad to hear people getting it and using it and enjoying it. It is so simple, and I'll be honest, if I was just a guy, just a regular Joe, I sound like I'm not a regular Joe. I am a regular Joe, but what I mean is if I wasn't hosting a tech show every week, I'd probably just use this all the time because I love the Blind Shell Classic. I really do. But, you know, I've got to stick out. I've got to keep around for you guys to, you know, to know how to use all this other stuff. But, you know, I do love my iPhone. Of course I do. But I think that it's a great, great phone. I just wish that had come out maybe 10 years ago. And I don't really understand why it couldn't have come out 10 years ago. But, you know, it seems crazy that we're now at 2020 and this kind of technology, which is kind of old, you know, is being brought up to date with his voice and everything else and that capability. But the bottom line is, if you don't want a smartphone, if you don't feel the need, I think this feature phone, that's what they would call this, is brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant.
And I think there will always be an audience for that, a market for those less daunting, less smartphones, but still very, very
useful.
My
holiday phone. I'm taking it on holiday. Whenever I go on holiday again, I'm going to take it on holiday. That's a perfect holiday phone. Because, you know, that's the thing, you're at the beach. I mean, it's not a cheap phone, right? So I'm not going to be, you know, throwing it around in the sand. But, you know, if it did slip out of my pocket, I'm not as worried about it as I would be with sand getting into my iPhone. You know what I mean? Anyway, Andy, what else have you got?
Morning, lads. This is from Wayne. I'm using the iOS Braille keyboard to write this mail, and it does mean that you can type mail much faster than the on-screen keyboard, whilst at the same time reinforcing Braille retention and learning. There you go. Anyway, he says, the reason for...
Difficult to do on the iPhone SE, though, with my fat fingers.
Ah, yes, sausage fingers again.
Just saying.
Anyway, the reason for my writing is to say to Garth in Ireland that I have, in my cupboard, under the stairs, an Opticon. Now, I'm happy for you to share my mail address with Garth to act as an intermediary to get this to him. So, Garth in Ireland, if you're still listening and you're still after that Opticon, which was, a month or so ago, maybe, I think we covered that. Get in touch with us again, and we might get you in touch with Wayne. It's interesting, really, he says. I have some old tech that I tried to give to local blind organisations to pass on to someone else in the local community on three occasions, but they never came back to pick up on the offer. Do you or the RNIB know of a recycling service for old tech for others to use that could be sent to developing nations, for example? I still have an old external speech synthesizer and a micro writer that Robin might know about from ancient times. Bracket, not that you're ancient, Robin.
Thank you.
It would be good to promote / establish a recycling point for blind tech for the benefit of the wider blind community to support each other. Please do let me know if Garth wants to connect for the Opticon. Hey, it just popped into my mind before I go. Maybe Tech Talk could offer a swap shop section. That's not easy to say if you don't have your teeth in. Yes, he says, that's a great idea. Smile. Yes, that's from Wayne.
Wow. Listen, Bags being Keith Chegwin.
Yeah,
you can be Noel Edmonds, and he can be Maggie Philbin. No, that's not right.
Wasn't it? I can't remember.
John Craven, Maggie Philbin.
You're older than me.
Multicolored. Let's do it.
Yeah, I'll be honest. That's a great idea because you know it's very difficult to buy this stuff. I was actually looking on eBay last night for the Braille stuff, you know, and I was finding all kinds of old kit, but there wasn't much. In fairness, there wasn't much around, and you had to really kind of know what you were looking for to find it. And, you know, it was usually coming from companies that had actually got this stuff sent to them and they were maybe selling it on as parts or whatever. But there doesn't seem to be a place. Wasn't there FreeCycle or various email lists you could join?
Certainly,
at these points?
There are lots of... there's Tech for the Blind news list, email list. There's VIPhone. There's a number of, email lists that you can subscribe to and they're very, very active. Obviously,
how do you find
Rail
them, Robin?
App.
Oh yeah, feel real. Yeah, that's quite a lot of American people. Yeah. Well, not that's a problem, but
it's the same with the others as well. I'm afraid
not many British people on it to talk to. I guess.
I know a lot of people.
Yeah, that's right.
I know a lot of people do recommend FreeCycle, but I only know it as the kind of things that if you had access to a car and you were able to pick up, like maybe a wardrobe or something. Yeah. I don't know if they do it specifically for tech. Same with Facebook Marketplace as well, and I don't know how accessible that is as a service as well.
Some of the older tech that for blind people would require a van because
van.
It's, you know, a CCTV I used to use, which they now call desktop video magnifiers. I remember the one I used at school came with its own trolley.
Yep.
And you couldn't lift it off the trolley. I mean, you could, but you would die. And if it fell off that trolley, run, because you know your foot was going to go missing. It was some size of the machine, you know, and big, massive CRT monitor, yep. Huge camera inside it, it was an incredible weight. But no, that's a great idea. That someone should definitely do that. But yeah, well, that's great. If Garth gets in touch with us, we can connect you. But Garth has to get in touch with us first, so we can know that he's okay passing on details, and then we will we'll connect you to and get that sorted out. I think Garth's going to be quite chuffed at that. Right, we've got time for a couple more.
Right, so we were talking about the Opticon. Here's one from Kelly in Loxwood, a friend of the show. So yeah, mentioning the Opticon again. If you remember, 2 years ago, I spoke to you about the Opticon and explained what it looked like and how it works. The Opticon was phased out back in 1996 and it became obsolete. Now, because Robin doesn't know what it looks like and has never seen one, I will explain what it was. The Opticon is rectangular and is about the size of a large cassette recorder. You had a camera which was attached to a cable which is the size of a penknife. The user would place the left index finger on the template, keeping it flat. It had thousands of pins in it, and when you scan the camera on a letter, it will vibrate, making each letter tactile. Reading a page of a document, such as a blank statement, was very slow and also very noisy. You had to have some training to use the Opticon, which wasn't that simple. Although at the time, during the 70s and 80s, it was the only reading machine that allowed you to read print. Texts to speech became more popular than the Opticon because it allowed you to look at printed text a lot faster. I think for educational purposes, it should come back. It doesn't fit with the 21st century. The Opticon doesn't exist, which is a shame in a way. I certainly wouldn't go back to it because it is a long slog to read a document. But it was fascinating at the time while it lasted. And while I didn't like when you had your index finger on the template for some time, your index finger went rather numb, and so it wasn't the most comfortable of feelings. I don't think you can get parts for it anymore either. Unless, of course, like Wayne, you have one stuck under your stairs somewhere. But yes, that email is from Kelly in Loxwood.
Yeah, I love talking about all this old stuff. Some of it I would love to see come back in some way. Because, I mean, if, you know, as Kelly says there, Robin, that's a different reading method. That's the whole point of it.
Yeah, I mean, thanks, optional Kelly, for that description. I feel like I know it intimately now. I'm not really sold on the idea, but I still think having the smartphone camera to take a snap of something that you want to then turn into some sort of 3D tactile thing and just wirelessly send it to a 3D printer and have it give you some sort of nice tactile form of a map or a diagram or something. I think that's a really good niche area that for some reason the assistive technology market has not gone into at all.
Do you ever remember the these at school? We used to use them for all our kind of graphs and images and stuff. You get these tactile embossers.
Thermoform.
Remember those?
You'd bake the plastic sheet.
Yeah. Yeah. And I used to love the smell of the paper once it had been, you know, cooked essentially inside this machine, because it would come out really hot, and then it would have this, because it was quite thick paper, or it had to be obviously to handle what was being done to
it. And you just stand there sniffing it.
Yeah, pretty much. I loved it. And of course, I was going to say my nose was up to it anyway, but it wasn't. I was using it as tactile. But I used to love the smell of that. It just takes me back to school. I think if I ever smell that, it's one of those things, one of those smells of the past. You know, you suddenly, oh, wow. So I don't know if a 3D printer smells like that, but no, it's incredible.
The thing that smelled, arguably the sighted equivalent of that, which is the old bander, or mimeograph, I think they call them, where they're purple ink and they kind of roll around lots and lots of copies. This was before photocopying. That smelled amazing. Mm. Yeah, that was probably banned for the smell alone.
I know. None of these things are good for you. right. Thanks, Kelly. What else have we got?
Just to say before we get to the last email, if anybody has a question or a query you want to throw to Robin or Stephen, you can email techtalk@rnib.org.uk. So this last one here is from Lindsay. Now, we started off talking about the Apple iPad, so we're going to round off the show with it as well. She says, I have a new Apple SE 2020. It's great.
Hey.
Any ideas? I have an Apple iPad and I use Facebook on it with speech. Now, for some reason, the notifications button has stopped working. If I log into my Facebook on my phone, it works. But if I use someone else's iPad and log on as me, it doesn't work. It was working fine on my iPad, but suddenly stopped about 12 midnight a few weeks ago. Any ideas? Gratefully received. That's from Lindsay.
That sounds like a bit of a bug or a glitch. You could either wait until 13.5 comes out and see if that fixes it, or I'd probably just uninstall the Facebook app and reinstall it and see if that rectifies your notifications. Stephen?
Yeah, notifications. Now, is this the notifications in the app we're talking about here? So, you know, at the bottom of the screen, because I'm thinking it should be there. So therefore, if it's not shown up, like you say, it's a bug. But then I'm wondering also, what are your notifications set to inside notifications in the settings app of the iPad? Have you got them turned off? Would that affect how that works in the app? I don't know.
I'm assuming she'll have checked there. So yeah, we're talking either system notifications versus the notifications tab in the app. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it could be one or the other, but I think you're right. I think I would uninstall and put it back on again. Glad you're loving the SE, though. The SE is just a great phone. I know we're getting lots of emails about that and people commenting on it. I think it is definitely going to be the blind phone. Although, actually, we didn't talk about this, but although it hasn't been officially announced, WWDC is coming. That has been announced. It's June 22nd. And it's all online, virtual only this year, of course, due to the dreaded virus. But interestingly, there have been a lot of leaks about the new iPhone 12. Now, I said last week that I thought the iPhone SE would be the iPhone 12 killer. But I don't know now, because there's rumour of a small iPhone. And this actually ties into another rumour I heard last week, that the starting price of the new iPhone 12 was going to be $649. And I thought, well, hang on a minute, how's that going to work? But they're talking about bringing a smaller version of the iPhone. Now, mine's is a 5.8. I think the 11 Pro is and a 5.8-inch. They're talking about something even smaller than that for the kind of entry-level to iPhone 12, giving three versions of the iPhone 12, possibly with 5G. So that could be interesting, Robin.
Yeah, so it's 4.5, I think, the SE. The 8, 7, 6, all of those, you know, they're
all 4.7. That's 4.7. The iPhone SE is 4.7.
So it will be a little bit bigger, probably same in the hand, but just without the bezels. So, yeah, if you want to, and I think it'll have squared off edges like the iPad Pro, no rounded edges, apart from obviously the corners. But so, yeah, if you want to.
Not buying another phone.
Yeah, no.
Not buying any more phones.
But that's the thing, you see, no Touch ID, which you do need bezels
yes.
for. And I think people are going to prefer keeping the Touch ID around as long as possible.
Unless they built it in under the screen, which has been talked about. Anyway, look, that's it for our show this week. Thank you so much for tuning in, Andy and Robin. Thank you so much, guys, for being here as well. And we'll do this all again next week here on Tech Talk. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, everyone.